Everybody, welcome to a special episode of Objection, worldwide leader in contrarian a-holery. It's been a while, but we are here to bring our a-holery to you, because we have plenty to be a-holes about. This is Dave Johnson, joined by Dan Mancini.
Greetings.
And, well, there's this little movie that came out this weekend. You may have heard of it, called Man of Steel. And if anything, I'd say one word to describe it, Dan, is polarizing, apparently.
Apparently. I feel like, you know, up is down, black is white.
Dogs and cats living together?
Right. We're so far, I guess, into the realm of a-holery that I now feel like just about every other critic on the planet is an a-hole.
So, yeah. So this is, you know, way back when we set up Objection to be kind of, yeah, contrarian a-holes, you know, counterpoints and whatnot. And we said, you know, after a while, we decided that, you know, we're only going to come back for something that really kind of gets our goat. And I don't think I've felt as disconnected from the conventional wisdom of critics than since Avatar, probably, you know, but on the other side of things. So I guess then the suspense, we both feel Man of Steel is quite outstanding, yes?
Yes,
and,
definitely.
Yeah, so like to the point where I saw it on Friday, 11 o'clock a.m. with my dad, and I'm still thinking about it today, and I can't remember the last comic movie that's happened, probably Dark Knight, you know, Dark Knight Rises, possibly, but kind of still been thinking about it, and the more I think about it, the more outstanding it gets.
Yes, I would agree with that too. I saw it about the same time, morning on Friday, and with my dad and son. And
wow, that's a trifecta.
I'm still thinking about it. I think it's richer the more I think about it.
I think so too. And who would have thought you might be saying this about a Zack Snyder movie, which, you know, I don't want to fall into that trap, actually, because I think he sometimes gets a bum rap just based on stylistic stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So I won't pile on, because he has made, I think, more better movies, which is terrible grammar, than worse ones. So, but this was unlike any Zack Snyder film I've seen, for sure.
Yeah, even stylistically. No slow motion.
No slow motion. So stylistically, thematically, I think, and just what a ballsy way to tell the Superman story, a story that is in desperate need of an edge to it.
Yeah, so, and you know, everybody leading up to it, everybody focused on, oh, it's going to be darker and all this kind of stuff, and are they going Batman with it and all this. And what was interesting about it to me was, it wasn't so much darkness, it was taking a myth that we're all hyper familiar with and adding some layers to it that made it more interesting.
Or how
that's
about
what these films should do, you know?
Yeah, and how about simply just seeing what would have really happened if this superpowered alien were to land on Earth, you know?
Right.
Like, how would his adopted Earth father react to it? How would people react to it? You know, how would the military react to it? And then and we should, by the way, say this will be filthy with spoilers, so.
Yes, it will.
You know, steer clear. But, yeah, how would these, and, you know, when they're talking about grounded in reality, they're not talking about, I mean, it's still a superhero movie. It's still Superman. It's an alien movie. He's got all these powers, you know, there's Krypton, all that stuff. But I think they're just saying, could it be more than just when Superman showed up to lift Lois's helicopter, everybody just went along swimmingly with things and said, oh, life is fine.
Right, right. Can we push back on all the assumptions that we make about Superman? It's like in the Richard Donner movies, it's like everybody on the planet in the movie already knows that Superman is a cultural icon before he shows up, because they just respond to him as though they've read the comic books or something.
Yeah.
And this movie isn't like that. And one of the things I loved about it was even from the very first moments, I realized for the first time how much Donner's view or his presentation of Krypton, the kind of ice world and all the crystal and everything, mm-hmm. how that had influenced us. And so there was this jarring moment, at least for me at first, where Zack Snyder's Krypton is so different. And then the more the movie went on, the more I just liked it better. It's like his eye for design and everything is so superior to Donner's, I think. Mm-hmm. And that world of Krypton is just rich and crazy. And the, you know, this kind of screens they have made out of ball bearings where they're three-dimensional and stuff. That stuff was incredible looking.
Yeah, true. You know, and let's So I was thinking maybe we could even – let's take a look at some of the prevalent criticisms you hear. And they're pretty much – it's kind of an echo chamber here. And, you know, I mean, let's just – so, look, we're going to be contrary and a-holes, so, you know, bear with us. But I thought maybe we could just tick down some of the stuff that seemed to have gotten people's underwear, you know, and kind of like sand from Tatooine, you know.
Yes.
In the desert because it gets everywhere. So the first thing, since we talked about it briefly, let's talk about the death of Pa Kent, which, you know, I've heard people say, oh, why, you know, why was it a heart attack? You know, that's, you know, it should have been a heart attack. So
right.
Obviously.
That's canon. Is that canon? I don't read the comic books enough to know, but.
That's a good question.
Even if it's not, who cares?
Yeah. So let's, we'll even assume it is, you know, so I don't know. So let's, you know, and we can compare it to what we know of the Donner films, because those films seem to be are being held up as kind of the standard and the gee whiz nostalgia that this movie should have been. So,
right.
I don't know. So, you know, so I've heard, like, why didn't Clark go save him? Why did he go for the dog? Why did he let himself die? That is not like Clark, you know, and I think it totally fits into what this character, you know, this father was built to be and played wonderfully by Kevin Costner, I thought.
Yeah, didn't the movie explain? I mean, didn't it answer those questions directly? Because Jonathan Kent told him not to come. And so he didn't do it. And he told him that because there are a whole bunch of people under the underpass. And he didn't want to see them. Or he didn't want them to see him use his superpowers. And so he made a choice in that moment. I mean, it's pretty explicit. So the idea that people are baffled by this, I'm confused by, frankly.
And maybe
that's
not
been my reaction to the reviews. It's like I'm completely confused about their confusion and irritation and the idea that somehow this movie is worse than Donner's movies.
So, like, you know, so as far as the heart, you know, so Jonathan dying from a heart attack, that has its own thing. Like, even with all his power, Superman couldn't save him, right? Okay, fine, you know, I could handle that. But isn't there just something interesting about what Superman, you know, what Clark learns about Jonathan's sacrifice here? You know,
like, yeah.
I mean, doesn't that say something just as interesting and in how that fits into the whole narrative of what it means to become Superman, you know?
Right. And I'd read somewhere somebody's reaction to the – one of the trailers was that they were upset about the fact that Jonathan Kent kind of says maybe to the question of, well, should Clark have not saved the kids on the bus when it went into the water? And I think that the tornado thing is the payoff to that maybe.
Right.
You know, but it's he's not putting other people's little kids up there to die. He's allowing himself, you know, he's sort of putting his money where his mouth is at that moment.
Right, right. And, that's kind of edgy having, I mean, that kind of sets that table, like, you know, when he says that, you know, maybe let those kids die, that's pretty crazy for him to say that, you know?
Yeah, so, yeah.
Right off the bat, that's, you know, that kind of sets that tone. So, I don't know, I just...
And you can tell in the moment that he doesn't mean that exactly, but
he's kind
expressing,
of,
like, I don't really have an answer
right,
to this question. I don't know what you should have done.
Right, 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 right. Absolutely. And, I don't know, I just found that, you know, I think it was perfectly done by Costner, just the expression he gave and the hand, and when he held up his hand, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that was just...
It was brutal. The other thing I love about the movie is that it doesn't build the entire mythology off of that like Spider-Man does. Like, oh, now Superman feels guilty, so he has to become a superhero.
Right.
He's got to put on tights and fight crime because he inadvertently caused his dad's death or didn't do what he needed to do to save him. You know, it doesn't go down that kind of simple path, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought there were a ton of moments like that where it's like, this would be an entire plot point, a run-of-the-mill kind of Marvel superhero movie. Like, so, yeah, so when he goes back to the farmhouse and he has that conversation with Diane Lane where he tells her that he knows where he came from and he knows who his father was and everything, and she has that pained look on her face for a second. It's great that the movie just treats that as a moment of realism. and it doesn't turn it into a whole angsty subplot where she's got to deal with this and he's got to, you know, deal with her emotions and all that kind of stuff. It's just a simple moment of realism where she's dealing with the fact that she has an adopted child who has biological parents that she doesn't know and that aren't, you know, connected to her in any way. And it's just that stuff like that where lesser movies would make a whole plot out of it.
Right.
And a whole bunch of fake drama and melodrama and stuff. And it just doesn't touch that stuff, which is great.
Yeah. And I particularly like how the backstory is told through flashbacks. So, I mean, really, if you total up the runtime of Jonathan Kent's, you know, presence, it's not a ton, you know, but each scene tells you something about the relationship and how that contributes to making Clark who he is.
Right, and it works so much better in flashback because in Donner's film, which I love, I mean, it was one of my favorite films as a kid, the scenes of him as an adolescent and stuff, it's just a couple scenes. It's probably less than what's in Man of Steel.
Right.
But it feels like a bigger part of the movie.
It does, right.
Only because it's everything's happening chronologically, and you're waiting for something to really happen other than characters having conversations and stuff.
Nice. So, so let's kind of get on to some of the bigger gripes about it. And I think a lot of that comes down to the end, you know, with all the collateral damage and the fate of Zod. So,
yes.
you hear a lot about, all these people dying, you know, whatnot. So, like, I keep coming back to the fact, and this is common, like, I mean, I know Nolan was more of an advisor on this stuff, but it seems to be kind of a theme that, like, if you're doing these things, if you're a superhero, if you're doing this stuff, there's a cost to these things, you know?
Yeah.
There's a cost. There's nothing free. Like, in all the Batman movies, there were steep costs that were paid, you know, by Batman, by Bruce Wayne. And then there are steep costs even for Superman here, as invulnerable as he is. And I will say that I don't think, you know, Snyder obviously did not shy away from the repercussions of an alien invasion. I mean, when you see those scenes of the shockwaves just rocking Metropolis, there are scenes of people dying and screaming, you know. There is death, and, you know, Superman is indirectly responsible for bringing that. You know, bringing that Zod in, you know. So, and then, you know, when they pummel at each other, all hell breaks loose for sure.
Right.
And, I mean, I just don't think, again, we brought up Marvel, and it's hard not to compare this to, like, Avengers, so to speak, where it wanted to kind of have its cake and eat it too, right?
Where somehow they managed to contain them within, you know, whatever, 20 blocks.
Right. So,
massive alien invasion.
I mean, this wasn't Superman 2, which I've realized as much as I kind of enjoyed it growing up, it's really not a good movie.
Right.
It's like since Man of Steel, you've had one good Superman movie, and the rest have been, you know, below average to God forsaken. So
right, exactly.
Sometimes we forget that. But
or delightfully entertaining.
Or yeah, inadvertently entertaining. Supposedly, right. You know. So it's like there were steep costs here, and there was no easy. I mean, I see people saying, "Oh, you could have grabbed Zod and flew them to the desert, or shoved them in the Phantom Zone, or I don't know, stuck kryptonite down."
No, that's the beauty of it. There is no easy answer because this version of Zod is not bent on revenge. So you can't just fly off to the North Pole and have Zod chase him. Zod doesn't care if he flies away. He's got other things that he's up to.
Yeah, if Superman flies
away, and they're right in the middle of the city, and so that's where Superman has to confront him, is right in the middle of the city. He doesn't really have a choice in the matter.
And he's really not, I mean, you could make the argument that Zod is more powerful than him, you know, and he just did kind of catch him a moment of weakness at the end, but it's quite clear Zod's a warrior. He put it all together a lot faster than Clark did, you know?
I think strategically Zod is he's a step ahead of Superman. I think in terms of power, I don't remember whether I've read this in an interview with Zack Snyder or whatever, but it's one of the things that I think is clever about the movie is that Superman is the most powerful of them because he's been on Earth for 30 years absorbing the sun's radiation. And so he's just stronger and his powers are more refined. It's kind of cool that he's got the like laser, like red heat vision, and Zod's is just like crazy fire eyes, you know, unfocused and,
right.
flying everywhere. Yeah, the other thing about the high death toll and everything and the complaints about it is it's one of those things like, come back to me when they make a sequel and it picks up as though none of this happened.
Right.
Then maybe there is an argument to be made that the movie didn't take the death toll seriously.
And we don't know how long after the fact, you know, were the last scenes of the first movie, you know.
Right.
The Daily Planet and stuff. We don't know how long.
Right, but presumably life's going to go on at some level, right. You know, just like it always does in the face of a tragedy. But I would imagine that, especially if Nolan is producing and it follows some of these patterns of his Batman movies, that the fallout of that is going to be part of the next movie.
Yeah.
Metropolis will have been marked by what happened.
And again, I never felt like when watching that stuff, I never felt like they were just blowing it up to blow stuff up real good, Michael Bay's right. way.
Which has been one of the criticisms leveled at it.
Right. I mean, if it was, Snyder would have gone slow motion. You know, he would have, I don't know, like there was that scene when he confronts Zod in like an ash pit and you just see the fallout behind him, you know, of these, that's a conscious decision to do. You know?
Right.
And I just, you know, Snyder said he shot the action like what it would be like if a human was watching these two go at it. There was no slowdown. Like, it was exhausting to watch, you know, for sure. So I just have to think that there was a conscious decision to, to do that. And again, that goes with the scenes of like, people are screaming and there are people dying, you know, and, Feyora is just wiping out people, you know.
Right. And it's a fact to me, I'm watching it thinking this is like the Saving Private Ryan of superhero movies. Like, we're finally seeing stuff on the scale that you would actually see if people had these kind of powers, you know,
yeah.
which you don't see in the Avengers or anything. It's like, this is the kind of crap that would happen. Like, skyscrapers would be falling down and stuff.
Yeah. Or, you know, people aren't getting hit with manhole covers or getting tossed into buses, you know, or being blown on their, you know, the super breath blowing them on their roller skates. Right.
Right.
So I just think, that those were all, because you could have fudged things. You could have done evacuation scenes. You could have not had these people getting wiped out.
Right.
But obviously,
it's also great. It is also completely awesome, I think, that unlike the Avengers, and, you know, that's a movie I enjoy, so it's going to sound like we're bashing it.
Right.
But it's only because everybody loved that movie, and, critics are bashing Man of Steel, and it's like, I don't get it. When Man of Steel is, in my mind, a much better movie, even though I enjoy watching The Avengers. But the thing about it is, like, I love the fact that in Man of Steel, the military is involved.
Yeah, that's true.
And,
yeah.
You know, it's not like he's working with them, but they're doing their own thing. They're trying to deal with this problem, too. In The Avengers, it's like, where are they? Like, you couldn't fly some jets in there and shoot some of these aliens riding around on flying scooters. You can't take an F-14 in there or something.
I mean, the supporting mortals are actually, you know, Snyder gives them stuff to do, whether it's like Perry White and those guys running around the debris or, the Air Force guys kind of doing that. I mean, they're not these little reactive victims at all, right? So I think that kind of goes with...
And I think it's thematically important because it gets back to that idea that Superman is a citizen of this planet.
Right.
The way that Zod sees himself as a citizen of Krypton. And so it's not just Superman versus Zod. It's sort of like all of Earth.
Right. And that gives you that great scene of when Superman emerges from the debris in Smallville and the military guys just kind of stare at him dumbfounded, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lower their weapons and you get the nice line, you know, this man is not our enemy.
Right.
And then, then things kind of click, right? And then that's how the American icon is starting to be built. Oh, that's the other thing, too. It embraces Superman as an American hero, you know?
Yes.
American icon. This is not Superman Returns, which, again, comparing... Now, I will happily dump on Superman Returns.
Yes, I will, too.
Because I think that, like, especially... I saw it once. I never wanted to see it again. But I've especially grown to loathe it now, seeing this, just because... Yeah. I mean, would you rather your Superman be ineffectual and jealous and horny? and a deadbeat right. dad. I don't know, is that
Peeping Tom?
Peeping
you know,
Tom,
and, I mean, Stalker.
Is that what you're kind of? Is that what you're angling for? So I don't know. I have trouble kind of.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And this one handled, you know, didn't run from the American Way part, and I thought that it was expressed really well in the flashbacks because you see, you know, the fishing boat and all that kind of stuff and Smallville, and so you see sort of these different parts of America and stuff, and yet it wasn't in a sort of old-fashioned rah-rah way either, because one of the other things I loved, considering the fact that Superman's always accused of being a tool of the government and all that kind of stuff, you know, that kind of Frank Miller criticism of him, is in this he's not. It's right. like, you know, he's very clear with them in a calm manner that, look, I do this how I want to do it.
Yeah.
Like, you can't control me. You know you can't control me. And I'm not signing on to be part of the American military or anything like that. I'm a free agent here, and you're
yeah.
just going to have to deal with it, you know.
Right.
When they're sort of like, well, you know, how do we trust you? Or, you know, how do we know you're going to – and his answer is basically like, well, you don't have any choice.
Yeah.
You just have to trust that – because what are you going to do?
And the other thing you've heard sometimes is, oh, not, you know, not enough character development, especially between, you know, Clark and Lois. And I have to say I mean, first of all, this Lois is way better than
yes.
any – I mean, I love what they did with her, and I think – glad they dispensed with that. How does she not recognize him with, I was glad, you know, with his glasses on?
Right.
They just took care of that. But, I mean, I think, again, this was kind of, it was kind of Spartan the way they told it, but it was effective, you know, like Jonathan Kent stuff. You know,
right.
you had these scenes that weren't huge, weren't long, they weren't overdone, but they were important, like when she's talking to Clark in the graveyard, right?
Right.
Or, you know, or when he gives himself up to the aliens and she's there, you know.
I thought it was a very clear path. And, I mean, okay, they didn't fly through the air while she recited
right.
poetry in her mind or whatever, and that kind of stuff. But to say that by the end of the movie when they kiss, that seems to be coming out of nowhere is, to me, the equivalent of saying that Han Solo and Leia falling in love at the end of Empire Strikes Back comes out of nowhere. Because it's the same kind of thing. Their romance it's developed across action,
yeah.
across a lot of dialogue.
Right, right.
It's the fact that they're in peril together and they're in that ship and, you know, she sees his weakness when he can't breathe well and everything. And he saves her when she gets dumped out of the Krypton
and their first interaction was when he uses, you know, he cauterized that wound, right?
Right.
So right off the bat.
And you get a sense that he kind of admires her for figuring things out. Like, she's the only person who's traced all this stuff back to
right,
him.
Right, right,
in Smallville.
I mean, this will kind of get ahead of it, but, like, the final scene of when the infamous Zod scene happens, to me, is just
yes.
fantastic.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Like, the role she plays in that sequence. And then how it sets up just that perfect last dialogue exchange in the movie as well.
Right.
You know?
It's really important because I think more than any other superhero and their love interests in comic books and stuff, like Lois Lane is a really important character to the whole mythology and everything. Like, she can't just be window dressing like
right.
in most superhero stuff. And she's not in Donner's film. And this is a very different take, but I think it's the best version of Lois Lane that we've seen since Margot Kidder
right.
played her. Very different.
Very.
And better, I think potentially better, because there's no, you know, Superman 2 moment of, you're a real pain in the neck, you know, that kind
yeah.
of stuff.
Or
some of
that like,
stupid stuff. That,
yes, give up your powers for me. That's
right.
a great idea.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we've been dancing around. Let's get to it. Probably the biggest, the most criticized thing is the very end when faced with an impossible choice. Superman snaps Zod's neck and kills
yes.
him. And lots of uproar there. You know, Superman would never do this. Who is this guy? This is, you're betraying me. There's been some real melodramatic stuff being said about this stuff.
Right.
But it's not like it was unearned, and it's not like it was glorified either. You know,
no.
we didn't
yeah.
get the Bad Boys 360-degree camera spin. And we got a broken man who just, who falls to his knees, wailing,
right.
being in the arms of an Earth woman.
But before we even get to that, let's give it up to Snyder for delivering on the fact that, you know, every person walking into that movie who has any familiarity with these characters wants to see those two go at it.
Yes, yeah.
And sure. This movie delivers on it really finally.
Does. Yeah, it really does. I mean, this, at the very least, you have to say you've never seen, I mean, you know, going back to one, I mean, when did you just feel like this is Superman Unleashed, right?
Right. Like, in all of the Christopher Reeve movies, I have to say, as much as I love the first one, you never see Superman really punch something as hard as he can.
Right.
And in Man of Steel, you do. A number of times.
And he gives it, and then you get the full enchilada, you know, like, yeah. The flying tackles. I mean, really, the action is so unbelievably fast.
Yeah.
That was the stuff I had to untangle the most. So, like, when I go see it for, you know, more viewings, that's the stuff I really want to try to soak in because, I mean, I don't know how many gags or beats. I didn't even get the Wayne Enterprises logo on the satellite Easter egg that was shown up. So,
right.
Yeah, so, yeah, what would these two godlike beings, what would happen if they collided? You know, that's...
I think you're absolutely right that Snyder does not play that moment in an exploitative way. And I think the entire movie sets it up. You know, that whole idea that Superman is something more than these other Kryptonians have been, that he sort of has all of their potential in him. And it's set up when Zod talks about, you know, everything I do to protect my people.
Mm-hmm.
And then he puts Superman in that position. And so it's just interesting that Superman does exactly what Zod talks about doing, but he does it in a noble way, which is what people who are complaining about this miss, I think, as opposed to just, I'm going to slaughter everybody on a planet in order to turn it into Krypton.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill billions of people. You know, he's saving a family of people.
Right.
And he's basically saying in that moment, I'm an Earthling.
Right.
That given the choice, the Zod is not my people. These are my people. And these are the people I'm going to protect. He's forcing me to choose, and I'm choosing the people of Earth. So it's a huge, important moment, and just brush off as Superman would do that. It's sort of the same thing as with Dark Knight Rises, like Batman wouldn't just retire. Well, in the comic books, but the comic books are a 40-year soap opera or 70-year soap opera or whatever. You know, this is a different medium, and it has different storytelling demands. And
I just think it's interesting, too, and I think I read an interview with Goyer where he talks about this, just – taking these heroes and then putting them into these impossible situations and making them choose and making sure that there are costs to their actions, that there are stakes there, you know?
Right.
And there was no good decision in that, you know? There was no good decision in The Dark Knight with a face-off with Harvey Dent, right? I mean, there's eerily similar stuff, don't you think? Harvey Dent is threatening to kill a family. And Batman is forced to, you know, break one of his codes, right?
Right.
I mean, that's pretty similar stuff.
That's the Christopher Nolan thing. It's the, you know, it's what he picked up from film noir that he loves, which is you put a character in a no-win situation and you see how they react. You know, you put the guy from Memento in a situation where he can't make memories. And how do you organize your life? Well, you turn yourself into a serial killer by creating a bunch of clues that help you hunt your wife forever. You know, as soon as you kill a guy, you just start the game over again. That's how you deal with your, you know, it's that kind of thing, and it's in all of his movies, and you can tell that, you know, I mean, that's sort of his thumbprint in this movie, I think, is the extremes to which he will put characters. And you may not like that if you're a huge comic book fan, but from a storytelling perspective, saying, well, he just wouldn't do that is not, that doesn't fly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's not a reason not to write something a certain way. And I think the entire movie leads up to that moment. It's not like it's gratuitous.
No, right.
And I think that the payoff you're talking about with Lois and him sobbing is the expression of he wouldn't do this under normal circumstances. But those are kind of abnormal circumstances.
Yeah. So let's wrap this up with being even more contrarian and being more a-holes, and let's do some conspiracy theory. Why do we think just to conspiracy theorize, you know, why do we think it's been getting such a bad rap, the film?
Yeah, I think there's layers and layers. I think they don't want Zack Snyder to succeed. I think his track record is, there's a lot of movies, most of his movies critics have not liked.
Right.
Most of his movies I have liked. I didn't like Sucker Punch particularly, but I thought Watchmen was great. I enjoyed 300 okay as, you know, fun entertainment. And I thought his remake of Dawn of the Dead was pretty good.
Yeah.
And I think he's a really good visual director. You know, one of the things, and I think that continues to come out the more movies that he makes. That scene where, Jor-El kind of lays out Krypton's history.
Yeah.
And you have like the tableau and everything. Yeah. It reminded me of, it's completely different kind of scene, but the title sequence of Watchmen, of how well, how gifted Snyder is at telling a story visually, really economically.
Right.
You know, I just thought it was an amazing sequence, and it's like, man, that's something that you just would never get out of a director like Donner, who's good. He's a serviceable director, but he just doesn't have that kind of eye. He's not that unique a filmmaker. You know, he's much more making movies by the numbers kind of thing. So I think that's a huge part of it. It's just, it's Zack Snyder. They don't want to take it seriously.
How about Dads in the Midwest?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, too many dads.
Too many dads. Yeah.
You know, Batman's great because he doesn't have any parents. So, you know, what's more non-traditional in terms of family than just having a butler being raised by yourself, you know? Superman has too many parents.
Yeah, so I don't know. Having a little fun there. I think the most
Nolan
of the stuff,
too.
They Nolan, want right.
To fail.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe that's.
And it's not going to happen this time.
Right.
Sorry. And, you know, this is a little bit of a tangent, but I mean, still related. To give you an idea of how warped the reviews are on this, the movie has a 56% rating, rotten rating at Rotten Tomatoes. Superman Returns is 75%.
Right.
How is that possible?
I don't understand.
Superman Returns is longer than Man of Steel, and nothing happens in that movie.
No, nothing.
Except that Superman acts creepy, and everybody is too young, other than Kevin Spacey, for the role that they're playing. It is a bafflingly horrible movie.
Yeah.
That's 75% of critics.
That's
liked.
True. And that is a legit apples to apples comparison. So this isn't like Avengers to Superman. This is Superman to Superman. You know, different interpretations. So yeah. Baffling is a good word. So, I don't know. You know, like I said, haven't stopped thinking about it. I can't say that about a lot of comic book movies. I mean, aside from Avengers, I can't think of a Marvel movie I've thought about. One, you know, really once I left the theater, you know, it's just different kinds of stuff, I think. And I just think.
Yeah. I mean, Marvel's really making popcorn movies and they are pretty disposable and they're fun, but that's about the extent of it.
Yeah.
And this is something much more. And the idea that, oh, this is some sort of Michael Bay, Roland Emmerich disaster movie. It's like, I understand that the action is big and everything, but isn't that what we wanted?
Right.
Superman Returns, number one. And number two, there's an emotional heft to it. This is nothing like Michael Bay. It's not buildings collapsing for the sake of buildings collapsing at all.
Right.
You actually care what happens to the characters. I don't even know the characters in Michael Bay and Roland. Like 2012, I don't remember any of the characters' names in that movie. I remember John Cusack was in it, but like I don't remember what they were doing. It was just about the spectacle. This movie's not like that.
Right. Right. So, all right. So, we love it. We think it's outstanding. Old White Man Cabal, have you heard yet from them? What's their take on it?
Given Superman's, you know, I don't think the movie views them. I would say the Old White Man Cabal is, you know, pro Man of Steel is my guess, which is probably another reason why it's not faring well on Rotten Tomatoes, because it's not anti-OWMC.
That must be it. You know? That must be it. So, well, once again, full disclosure, we are funded by a generous grant from the Old White Man Cabal, so
yes.
We essentially are hacked and do their bidding. But with that said, please, Man of Steel, I think, I don't know. Don't know.
Listen to everybody that you know who says, this is awesome, go see it. Don't listen
there's
to
There's a reason it has a cinema score of A-. And there's a reason why like, it kind of had a, like its Sunday numbers were just as good as its Saturday numbers. And yeah. I will attribute some of that to the Father's Day stuff. But
and what a great movie to see on Father's Day.
Yes.
It's essentially about fatherhood, which is probably another reason why it's hated. You know, God forbid that there be any sort of positive view of fathers at all, that they be anything other than Homer Simpson-like
right.
morons. And this has two good ones, so that's way
right.
too many. You know,
that's
way,
right.
way above its
I mean, last time you've seen, this, you've seen two solid dads like this was had to be My Two Dads, right?
Right.
There you go. Yeah. And Greg Evigan kind of looks like Russell Crowe, so I think we're getting somewhere.
He does. If they ever do a TV version of Man of Steel, should hire Greg Evigan.
Get him on the phone pronto. All
was
right.
he in BJ and the Bear? He was, wasn't he?
Maybe. I don't know.
Oh, man. Do you remember that show?
I do not. Sorry.
Oh, he was a truck driver who had a chimpanzee named Bear.
Whoa, fun.
And I don't remember what they did. I'm pretty sure it was Greg Evigan. It was ridiculous.
Nice. All right. Well, I think we've said our piece.
Yes.
So we will see you for Man of Steel 2.
Yes.
So I guess, really, there's only one more thing left to say.
Thanks, 10 points easy.